Welcome to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts, featuring presentations by leading Cleveland Clinic physicians and medical experts. Today's speaker, Dr. Kim Gladden, presents Exercise, Bones, Aging, and You.
Okay, hi, I'm Kim Gladden. I guess I don't have to read what my background is, but same with the road here. I'm in sports and exercise medicine through the Orthopedic Institute at various locations throughout the area. I'm in Brunswick, I'm in Medina, I'm in Avon, and 2 days a month I run a dance clinic at Garfield Heights. So I'm kind of all over the place. And I see both athletes, non-athletes, really anybody with orthopedic problems, injuries, issues that would like to be seen, I try to see. So let me see if I can get this to work. And the talk is entitled Exercise, Bones, Aging, and You. And I realized that actually it probably should be titled Exercise, Aging, Bones, and You, because it's a little, I'm not going to talk a lot about bones necessarily, but I am going to talk about some of the aging issues. So we see a general decline in functional capacity over age 40, and I will warn you that the first part of the talk is going to sound not very encouraging, but I think there's actually a lot of encouragement to be found in what I'm going to be saying a little bit later in the talk. We see a decline in physical activity and physiologic changes of aging, and these are going to impact general health. They're going to make it difficulty to maintain training required for fitness. So beginning at age 30, we start to see a decline in muscle mass for about 3 to 5% per decade. And this obviously is going to lead to a decrease in strength. Muscle is replaced by fat and collagen. It becomes less supple. And tendons and ligaments stiffen and lose strength. The discs in our back and the cartilage in our joints, which are our shock absorbers throughout life, begin to get wear and tear. And because of this, we see changes in posture, and I think most people can relate to that as they age, especially with the back. You begin to see more stooping, you make it more creaky in the back. This is loss of some of the disc space. There's a disc in between each vertebrae that's fluid filled. It's called the nucleus, and that begins to decrease over time. It gets less fluid filled. We get the disc itself gets stiffer. So we can also start to see stiffness in the joints, such as the knee and the hip, with loss of articular cartilage. And these are some of the changes we see with arthritis. So bones are pretty interesting. They're constantly changing through a process called remodeling. So all through life, the bones are being resorbed and they're remodeling again, they're forming again. And this really stays balanced for quite a long time, but then as we get older, we begin to get a change in that balance between formation and absorption. And this can lead to loss of bone. So as we lose some of the mineral content of our bone, they become more dense, more fragile, we're more likely to have fractures or difficulties. And if you lose enough mass, osteoporosis develops. And most of us either probably have known someone with osteoporosis or have it in our families or ourselves. It's measured against a 30-year-old population. So even though you are measuring the bone mass of a, say, 55-year-old woman, when you get what's called the T-score is measured against the absolute best bone it can be at about age 30. So you're not really seeing what you are compared to other people your age, you're seeing what you are compared to best bone mass, if that makes sense. Excuse me. So we have osteoporosis type 1 and osteoporosis type 2. Osteoporosis type 1 is really the result of normal aging, and we see that, and I say that with a grain of salt in terms of normal aging, because I think there are some things you can do to slow that process down. But we tend to see that more in postmenopausal women. It affects what's called the trabecular bone. If you look at bone, it's this beautiful spongy material with a hard shell casing. And the inside spongy material is the trabeculae. And because of the weakness of the inside of the material, you can start to have fractures, specifically in the thoracic vertebrae, which is the upper back, and the lumbar vertebrae, which is the lower back. And there are certain risk factors that may make it more are likely for you to get osteoporosis. Unfortunately, one of them is being female. Another one is being Caucasian, slender, family history of osteoporosis. Just different things can all be a confluence to affect your bones. Osteoporosis type 2 presents in both genders, and this is associated more with loss of cortical bone, or the bone on the outside. Here we see fractures of the hip and the femoral neck, and this is usually secondary to something else. It can be secondary to immunocompromised states. You've been ill for a long time, you're not getting good nutrition. It can be secondary to long-term prednisone or corticosteroid use. So there are other factors that can affect the bones. There are neurologic effects of aging. We have decrease in reaction time as much as 40% by age 60, as well as decreases in coordination, balance, and proprioception. Proprioception is knowing where you're at in space. And especially if you have a condition like diabetes and you have neuropathy, diabetics can lose proprioception because they can't feel the floor well. You know, you have neuropathy, it's hard to feel where you're at in space. And we also experience a decrease in visual acuity. Metabolic effects include a decline in your resting metabolic rate. In other words, how much you're burning just sitting there. If you have a 10-year-old active male, they may be burning calories at X amount per minute, whereas when you look at our 65-year-old male, they're going to be burning calories at a much slower rate. We tend to get an increase in body fat. Decline in body fat can happen later in life as you probably take in less calories, but I think the increase is what we all initially experience. So that all sounds really depressing, I'm sorry. The rest of my talk's better, I promise. So even though there are all of these age-related declines, the extent to which this is related to aging versus inactivity is not entirely clear. In other words, there is thought that this can be altered. It may not be altered to the extent that you're going to have your 20-year-old body back, but it can certainly be altered to the extent where you're not going to have some of the profound difficulties that you might have if you're completely inactive. So as you're exercising through the decades, you can prevent or even reverse, in some cases, the signs of aging. And your capacity to exercise and improve strength, flexibility, and performance can actually be maintained throughout life. Now, this is difficult if you haven't been a lifelong exerciser, but it's even true for folks who really haven't exercised. Because if you don't do cardiovascular exercise, but you start walking, I don't know, a block a day, that block a day is burning calories. That is a block a day more than you were walking, and you will develop the cardiovascular capacity to withstand that and be able to add to that. It's called the progressive overload principle. You can progressively increase the overload on the system as your body adapts to the exercise that you're currently doing. And exercise favorably impacts all of the body systems. I was very happy to hear Dr. Appleby say you have to find something you love doing, because that's so true. I hate when we just tell people to go exercise, because that's almost a meaningless statement. You know, you telling me to go exercise is going to mean something completely different than me asking you what you like to do or what you want to do for exercise. And it doesn't have to be running a marathon. So in looking at some of the studies, there was a study done in JAMA in 1989, and they found in studying 10,000 men, 3,000 women, that all-cause cardiovascular disease and cancer mortalities were highest in the men and women in the lowest quintile of fitness, or the lowest fifth, if you broke that population into fifths. The lowest fifth had the highest mortalities due to these conditions. And the greatest risk reduction in terms of reducing that risk just by exercising was greatest between the lowest fifth and the second lowest fifth. So they made the greatest strides just by doing a little bit of exercise. Moderate intensity for 30 minutes daily can confer measurable cardiovascular health benefits. And if that's possible, another 30 minutes would be expected to confer additional protection. I do want to say, though, if you have cardiac condition, you have to be cleared for exercise by your physician. You want to talk to them about what's appropriate, what to expect. Do it under a controlled condition or with somebody who's going to be monitoring you. So if you've had things like stents, any kind of valve replacement, you want to be doing this in some kind of controlled fashion to make it safe as well as beneficial. Looking at heart disease in a 1990 meta-analysis, this is 27 studies. Physically active individuals had about half the risk of coronary heart disease than their sedentary counterparts. Exercise can lower blood pressure, and moderate intensity is actually more effective than high intensity exercise. So again, it doesn't always have to be that you're really knocking yourself out. Exercise can improve insulin sensitivity and glycemic control in diabetes, and moderate and high intensity exercise is equally efficacious. So you improve, you improve glucose uptake in the cells when you're exercising. It can actually, modify some of the effects of diabetes. And walking can be comparable to a more vigorous activity. Again, if you're starting from a point of not doing a whole lot of exercise, anything that you can get in, and especially anything you enjoy, you're going to be more likely to continue doing. It can improve blood lipids, and this seems to be a dose-response relationship, meaning that the blood lipids improve a little bit more as you start exercising more. And it seems the profile of blood lipids seems to be more related to the amount of exercise rather than the intensity. You don't have to be breathless to get this improvement. In type 2 diabetes, there's a 58% reduction in diabetes incidence with lifestyle modifications, and this is out of a study from 2002. The exercise intervention in that study was nearly twice as effective as the medications. Again, putting that musculoskeletal demand on the body actually can improve the way insulin is functioning in your body, your endogenous or your natural insulin, and it can improve your cell's uptake of glucose so that you don't have the high blood glucose levels. In a Finnish prevention study, they found that individuals who increased physical activity were about 74% less likely to develop diabetes. And granted, this also has to do with genetics. So this may not negate your risk totally. There is some genetic component here, but you can reduce risk of development and you can certainly reduce the severity. As far as osteoarthritis, this is really an interesting one for me because I get a lot of questions about this. Exercise lessens the overall impact. What does that mean? That means it will not change what's going on in the joint. Osteoarthritis is destruction or disintegration of cartilage, which is this beautiful glass-like structure, say on the knees, that when it moves, rides over each other. And when you get arthritis, that cartilage starts to get fissures in it. It starts to become less smooth. It doesn't have the same glide mechanism that it did when we were younger, and it can become painful. Arthritis, however, won't change with exercise, but you can get the joint starting to make a little bit more physiological joint fluid, ease that movement a little bit, and negate some of the effects of the arthritis. So it won't reverse it, but it can definitely make it much more livable. Breast cancer and exercise, there is some evidence that higher levels of physical activity are associated with lower risk of breast cancers. And that degree of protection is about 30 to 40% decreased risk reduction with 3 to 4 hours a week of moderate to vigorous intensity exercise. Women who are physically active after breast cancer are actually at a lower risk of recurrence and death caused by breast cancer. So in terms of obesity, it does appear that the dose of exercise necessary for enhancing long-term weight loss may be somewhat greater than the minimal level of activity necessary for the other health parameters we're discussing. In other words, you're going to get those cardiovascular benefits. You may get some benefit from insulin or glucose control, osteoarthritis, but in order to lose weight, you probably have to increase the intensity or duration of exercise. Even small gains in bone mass can improve bone strength. Exercise decreases fracture risk even without the dramatic changes in the bone mass. Well, how can it do that? One way is you build strength, your balance is better, and you're at much less fall risk. And I think, as many of us know, one of the problems with a fall when you're older is if you break a hip, then that becomes very problematic. It can become a long-term stay in a hospital or a care facility. So if you can improve balance, if you can improve your gait through exercise, that can actually decrease some of the fracture risk. And in response to loading a bone, bone is formed where the biomechanical demands are the greatest. So while if you have osteoporosis, we may not be encouraging you to run because that jarring effect is going to be pretty profound on the bones, a good walking program is actually quite beneficial. Current recommendations by the American College of Sports Medicine are that you attempt moderate intensity aerobic exercise 30 minutes, 5 days a week, or vigorous exercise 20 minutes, 3 days a week. What does that mean? What is moderate intensity? There's a wonderful scale called the Borg scale of perceived exertion, which I didn't put up here. Borg scale basically says that if you can have a conversation while you're walking, you're probably at a light to moderate level of exercise. So if you're walking your dog and you can participate in a conversation with your friend, you're probably at a light, moderate level of exercise. That's a good level to be at. If you're starting to catch your breath, you're working really hard, you're at the higher end of the Borg scale, you're increasing your intensity, and that's probably going to be a little too much for what they're suggesting on moderate intensity. Aerobic exercise is defined by rhythmic movement, large muscle groups, for at least 20 to 30 minutes. So rhythmic movement can be walking, it can be biking, it can be the elliptical, it can be whatever it is that you actually enjoy doing. They also recommend major muscle strength building 2 to 3 days a week. I'm a big proponent of this, especially for women. We lose a lot of upper body strength as we age. And as the hormone system changes and estrogen declines, we begin to lose muscle mass and we start to have more problems with some of our daily activities. They also recommend activities for flexibility, therein the yoga, where's Dr. Appleby, activities for balance, again, yoga, ballroom dancing. I'm a big fan of those things, so if you're not, I get it, but they're fun. To improve fitness and decrease those disease risks and control weight, you have to exceed these recommendations, as I said earlier. So over the age of 50, overuse injuries tend to be the most common, with muscle strains being common, injuries to the rotator cuff, at the shoulder, and the Achilles tendon, and we can aggravate osteoarthritis. The vast majority of these are really best treated conservatively, and if you delay in seeking evaluation, sometimes that's going to lead to delayed recovery. Trying to limp around on something longer and longer might cause problems further up the chain. If you have a sore heel, you're limping on it, then your hip starts to bother you, then your back, so you want to get seen for some of these things. What about joint replacement? If you do proceed with a joint replacement, you want to make sure you're following the guidelines set by your surgeon and your physical therapy, and everybody's rehabilitation is going to be different, so don't expect your knee replacement to be exactly like your friend's if you do this. You're going to have a gradual, what I call, return to play or return to activities, and that's very doable. There are some things that you may not do with a joint replacement, such as kneel, do really awkward positions for yoga, stuff like that, but you can have a very active life after joint replacement. There's a lot of different techniques, and again, everybody's recovery is different. So if you're going to exercise, you want to warm up properly, get the blood flowing a little bit before you stretch. Make sure, and we're going to be talking about nutrition in a moment, make sure you're getting proper nutrition, proper sleep, and you can modify some equipment to minimize shock. For example, if you have wrist or elbow osteoarthritis and you love golf, you can have the strings on your tennis racket loosened. It won't put the same impact and force through the arm. And if you have other activities you like, you can modify some of the equipment so that you can keep doing your activities. You want to give your body time to rest and recover and make sure that you're conditioning year-round. Don't be a one-season whatever. If you're a golfer and you love golf, when you're not golfing, be working on some of the things that might enhance your golf game, some of the core strengthening, some of the back stretching, and make sure you're working with either a professional healthcare provider or a teaching pro if you have any questions about your form in your sport or activity. So the changes can be somewhat limited and somewhat preventative reverse if you are appropriate with safe physical activity, training, and nutrition. So hopefully the last part of my talk was much more encouraging than the first part of my talk, because it was meant to be. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts. For more information, please visit our website at clevelandclinic.org/health.